Brighton Business Show on Radio Reverb.
You're listening to the Brighton Business Show, and this is Vivian Smith.
The Brighton Business Show on Brighton's Radio Reverb.
So welcome to my first guest, who is Carrie Smith, no relation, from the Brighton Chamber. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Vivian.
And I know this is your first radio appearance, so I promise you it's not going to hurt at all. It'll be quite a nice experience, I hope.
Good to know.
So you're from the Brighton Chamber. First of all, can you tell me a little bit about how the Chamber works? I mean, it's a not-for-profit organisation, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So we are a not-for-profit membership organisation, and we help businesses in Brighton and Hove and the surrounding areas connect, learn and grow their business. What we're really good at is making people make the right connections in the city and meet each other and grow their network.
Okay.
So that they can raise their profile and grow their business. And we do that through a lot of our events that we put on, our networking events. We also have a bite-sized learning programme, which is the training that you mentioned, and we do about four of those a month, and those are run by our members, so it's a way of them to showcase the skills that they have with other Chamber members, and people can book on and, you know, get marketing skills. Or
nice, okay, so your members can raise their profiles and then people can also learn really, really useful stuff. Yeah. And I know that you collaborate, don't you, or partner with quite a few organisations. Tell me a bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Brighton is such a busy city.
Yeah,
there's a
sure.
lot going on and it's saturated with events. Mm-hmm. So we've realised that it's really important to collaborate more with each other in the city.
Okay.
So obviously we're really well connected in the city. We've got great relationships with the council, the economic mm-hmm. partnership, and also places like the universities and the co-working spaces. So it's really important to us to build those relationships so that we can put on events together, share our networks, and also share our knowledge and skills.
And I think that makes sense, doesn't it? Because businesses don't operate alone. That works very well, I'm sure.
Yeah, it just makes the events stronger.
Yes, and I guess they're better attended because of the wide contact list you've got, which is great.
Yeah.
Okay, and I know that you run lots of events yourself, and we're going to talk today about the Brighton Summit. So what is the Brighton Summit?
Brighton Summit is a day for inspiring speakers, expert-led workshops, and energising discussions with networking built in at every possible turn.
Okay.
It brings together around 400 businesses in the city, and that includes, you know, entrepreneurs, CEOs of the big businesses, mm-hmm. social enterprises and charities, universities, council, anyone and everyone is welcome.
I like the fact that you've got a mixture of SMEs, you know, larger businesses, and also training providers.
Yeah,
and I think
absolutely.
That's so you must get quite a lot of consequences, perhaps, of people meeting up on something like that day.
Yeah.
You know, people deciding to work together or work on a project or perhaps one person employing another. I can imagine all sorts of really great scenarios taking place.
Yeah.
As a result
exactly.
of that.
You know, people meet new people, but they also reconnect with other people that they've already got a relationship with. And I think that's a great thing. Something that's really lovely about the Chamber is that we've got a great community,
mm-hmm.
and that's sort of reflected in all of our events. And the Brighton Summit is a brilliant one. It's really friendly, and it's just a chance to meet new people, and, you know, who knows where that relationship will go.
So you mentioned 400 businesses. Is mm-hmm. that the kind of limit in the room? Is it 400 people or
around that? Yeah.
Yeah,
so we've
okay.
been growing steadily. This is the seventh
that's
year that we've had.
That's pretty impressive as a guest list.
Yeah, it's the seventh year that we've had the Brighton Summit, and mm-hmm. we've held it every year at the Clarendon Centre, New England Street, and they're brilliant to work with, and 400 has got to so far, and it's seems to be increasing. But yeah.
And is that 400 people in the same room, or do you kind of divide it into smaller workshops? How does it?
So
the
way that it's structured is that there are opportunities in the day where everyone comes together in one room, and there's keynote speakers,
mm-hmm.
and then there's a lot of breakout workshops and sessions, so people can
that
sort of choose
sense.
Speakers that they want to go listen to, choose workshops that they want to, you know, go to, and we publish all of that in advance so people can take a look and be like, oh yeah, I want to go to that workshop.
So they can kind of highlight what they want to.
Yeah,
want
exactly.
To do
and
that
it's
day.
Also it's nice to also break out into those smaller groups.
Mm. I think some people prefer a smaller group, don't they? They feel that they get more chance to interact.
Absolutely.
And,
I think networking can be a really scary thing for
absolutely,
people.
Absolutely, yes.
It's nice to know that you've got those sort of smaller rooms and like places that you can go where it's going to be a bit quieter. You can have genuine conversations with people and you know, learn.
Sure.
Grow.
That's great. And I know that you have a theme every year, don't you? So what's the theme for this year?
So this year's theme is crack on. Okay. This is all about deciding what your goals are, rolling up your sleeves and cracking on with it.
Okay.
So, you know, what that is depends on you and your business. Mm-hmm. You know, growth for one person doesn't mean the same as growth to another. Basically, we leave the attendees to fill in the blanks, but we give them the opportunity and the inspiration to make it happen.
So does that mean that a lot of the workshops will be aimed at that theme? Is that how you use the theme?
So we at the Chamber, and we have a group of curators who help sort of decide what the theme's going to be, mm-hmm. and have ideas about speakers and things. We get together and we pull out the strands of what the theme really means. So there's sort of different areas of what crack on can mean to different people.
Sure.
So we just try and make sure that our workshops and our speakers kind of meet all of those areas so that, you know, there's something for everyone on the day.
Yeah, I like that. Okay. And is there any sort of follow-up after the day? Do you do, I don't know, I'm thinking, is there a report or a questionnaire that people fill in or any kind of feedback?
Yeah, absolutely. So we do a survey every year for mm-hmm. everybody, and that just sort of gives us an idea of how useful the sessions were. So obviously they can say specifically what session they came to and, whether, you know, the good and bad points about it, if any. And we compile that and make a report every year on it, and we take that advice on board for
It helps plan future events, I guess, when you get that kind of feedback.
Absolutely. Yeah, we really value feedback from people, because
people are sometimes really nervous, particularly trainers. I know from having done a lot of training myself, trainers are often very nervous about feedback, but it can be tremendously useful content.
I know, you almost have to just break through that to just
because actually sometimes it's what would you like more of.
Well, exactly.
Or, you know, or what would you really like to hear that you didn't, but, you know, you're sure this trainer can deliver that.
And it's not always negative feedback.
No,
sometimes it's like, you were really great at this, do more of that.
Exactly.
And that's so useful to know.
And of course, you know, all trainers can improve. So it is also good to know, you know, it wasn't loud enough at the back of the room, we couldn't hear
Absolutely.
You. Or would have appreciated a handout or something like that. So there are
things
to learn.
So it's useful feedback for us, but also for the people leading the sessions, because it might be their first time doing a workshop, and, you know,
it's really quite a logistical nightmare, or can be potentially, I would imagine, running an event like this. How many years have the Chamber been running these kind of huge events?
So this is the 7th year they've run the Brighton Summit, and it is by far our biggest event. Mm-hmm. We do have a lot of events. We have about 100 events a year that we run, but this is on another scale.
Okay.
not quite 400 at a breakfast.
All right, but still pretty impressive.
It's challenging, but very exciting as well.
So briefly, what's on the agenda? I mean, obviously, I know you've got a lot happening on the day, and it is a day, isn't it?
Yes, so it's a day. It's Friday the 11th of October, and it's 8:30 till 6 at the Clarendon Centre, which I mentioned. Mm-hmm. It's a packed schedule. So we have three keynotes, two of whom have just been announced. First of all, Gina Miller. And she's well known for successfully challenging the government's authority to trigger Article 50 in 2016.
Mm, interesting.
Yeah, really, really cool. We're so excited to have her. So she's all about, you know, responsible capitalism and stepping up to defend what she believes is right. And we've also confirmed Carmel Ahmed, and he is editorial director of BBC News. And he recently wrote a book called The Life and Times of a Very British Man, and sharing experiences growing up as a mixed race boy in the 1970s. So His thing is, he's always talking about being the other mm-hmm, in a situation, mm-hmm. which obviously, again, means different things to different people, but I think that will resonate with a lot of people on the day. So really exciting.
Great.
But as well as our keynotes, as I mentioned, we have the speaker sessions and workshops. So these are things that people can choose from on the day and go along to different ones. So the workshops are really practical, they're expert-led, and it's a chance to gain new skills and also network as well, meet new people. So if you've got a new idea you want to implement, or you want to learn more about a certain topic, mm-hmm. Those are really great for people. You can take those skills away and start implementing them straight into your business.
Straight away.
So that's really great. We also have a special hour halfway through the day, which we've called the Engine Hour. And this kind of sets us apart from any other sort of big event in the city, I'd say, because long sort of typical conferences and day-long events can be really tiring for people, although they're always really great. So the Engine Hour is designed to sort of re-energise everybody and get everyone trying to do something different.
Listen. 97.2 FM.
Radio Reverb.
You're listening to Vivian Smith on the Brighton Business Show, and today I'm talking to Carrie Smith from the Brighton Chamber. And we've been talking about the Brighton Summit, which Brighton Chamber is organising. And you've just been mentioning, Carrie, that you've got a complete break in the middle of the day to re-energise everybody. Just tell me again some of the things that you're going to be offering.
So this is an hour in the day, it's halfway through.
Okay.
And it's kind of to reawaken everybody, you know, after they've been to a workshop.
Is this the graveyard shift? It's the beginning of the graveyard shift to wake everyone up.
Yeah, so it's designed to like get everyone re-energized. So we've got some amazing sessions that people can choose from depending on what they want to do, and it's everything from stand-up comedy workshop to a sewing session to an escape room and a brewery. It's anything and everything.
Excellent.
There's something for everybody in it, and it just means that they go into the afternoon full of beans and loads to chat about.
And good to have a bit of fun as well, because I think we do forget that we learn more when we're having fun, and we learn more when we've done, you know, we can breathe, we've relaxed, and also exercise is helpful, isn't it?
Yeah.
So moving around and
absolutely, we've had like in the past
brain.
We've had Charleston and all sorts
okay.
of things. So
I like it.
It's great fun.
Yeah, that's a great angle on it. I really like that.
Yeah.
Okay, where can people buy tickets and how much are they? I think there's probably a different prices there for a chamber member.
Yeah, so we have ticket prices for chamber members, which are currently at £99, and for non-chamber members they are £125.
Okay.
You can purchase your tickets and find out more information on the website, which is www.brightonsummit.com.
And I think the price goes up, does it, nearer the time?
Yeah, that's right. So on the 30th of September the prices go up, so the final price for members will be £110, and the final price for non-chamber members will be £140. So it's good to get them quick.
So really worth being the early bird.
Definitely.
In this situation. Okay. And what about contact details for you and or the Brighton Chamber? I mean, if people want to learn about becoming a member maybe, or perhaps visiting, I take it you allow visitors, do you, along
absolutely
on a
yeah we're,
of events.
We're always excited to meet new people and tell people about the Chamber. As a non-member, you can come to up to two of our events just as a taster, just to see what we're about and see if it's for you.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, we can have a phone call or meet for a coffee and chat a little bit more about what it is that you might like to get out of the Chamber. But you can find out more information on our website, which is www.brightonchamber.co.uk. And you can also drop us an email at any point, and that's info@brightonchamber.co.uk.
Okay, that's great. And so, Carrie, tell me, what's the one thing you're really excited about this year, about the summit? Because obviously, you know, there's lots going on. I can see from your expression that you're very involved, very engaged with it. But for you, what's going to be the highlight?
Well, I can't lie, Vivian. I think the thing I get most excited about is the food, to be honest.
Okay, fair enough. I wasn't expecting you to say that. But
well, obviously the sessions and the speakers are fantastic, but we don't say enough about the food.
Oh, well, tell me more about the food.
So it's really important to us to showcase the amazing food and drink industry that's happening in the local community.
Mm-hmm.
So we make sure that we've got food that doesn't make anyone feel sluggish.
Okay, yes, because that's also quite key, isn't it?
Yeah. So, you know, typically you tend to have a lot of like bread and things like that, which you know, tire you out, and by the afternoon you just haven't got any energy left. We have a lot of really, really tasty food, salad boxes with all sorts of amazing things in. We have coffee from Red Roaster, tea from Bird and Blend Tea Company. We've always in the past had amazing energizing juices food and those. We do have sweet treats as well, because you can't not.
I was going to say, not everyone's healthy.
Yeah,
surely there'll be some unhealthy attendees coming
yeah,
along.
Yeah, I mean, Higgity always kindly donate some of their lovely pies to
great.
Us on the day,
okay.
which is really, really kind.
And good advertising, of course, for all the people taking part in that.
Absolutely.
All the people who are supplying these yummy treats.
Yeah, we have incredible supporters who have supported us year on year, and we want to make sure that we're helping them, promoting what they're doing. And so, yeah, it's important to us to showcase what's going on in the city.
Great. Well, Carrie, I think your debut performance on radio has been very successful. I would definitely give you a job. Not that it's in my remit to do that.
That's good to know.
So thank you so much for coming on to talk to us about Brighton Chamber and the Brighton Summit. Carrie Smith, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
97.2 FM.
Radio Reverb. And welcome now to my second guest, and it's Atif Chowdhury. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, sure.
Yes, okay, from DNA. But not just from DNA, because you've got an amazing biography. I've just been reading about you. And one of the descriptions given is that you're a social entrepreneur. So can you tell me a little bit more about that, what that means to you and what that has meant for you in your work?
Yeah, sure. I don't know if it's a title that sits with me, but
but nevertheless, well, someone's, you know, given it to you.
Someone's given it to you, yeah. So I guess it's really about social enterprise and,
yes,
and whether or not there are entrepreneurs that are engaged for profit, mm-hmm, and that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
But it's also looking at how business can do good.
Okay.
And how businesses can exercise profit and support for communities and sustain themselves while they do it, you know. And I guess that's what social enterprise at the heart of it is about.
Sure, well, that makes sense. And tell me a bit about your background, because, I mean, among the many things credited to you are the fact that you co-founded a fair trade olive oil cooperative in Palestine. Is that right? Tell me more about that.
Yeah, I did. And that's an ongoing story that I'm very proud of, really, for a number of personal reasons. Mm-hmm. But it's a story that they said could never be done. So Zaytoun is an olive oil, is a social enterprise designed to support Palestinian families and farmers trade past the difficulties of the current occupation.
Which must make it an absolute nightmare. I mean, it's difficult enough to found a cooperative without militarization and people having their lands confiscated and all the other joys that are going on there at the moment.
Yeah, it's a challenge. And there's a great team. I mean, there's a great mm-hmm. team in London. There's a great team in Palestine.
Okay.
It's not easy. I mean, crikey, setting up a business anywhere from scratch is tough. Any sure. small business owner will tell you. Being a farmer in a time of difficulties is tough. Any farmer will tell you. Mm-hmm. But being a farmer in Palestine, you know, when you're facing daily militarization and incursions and land theft, and you're not able to trade because the largest wall ever built in recent history is there stopping you, it's not easy. But as a team, we were there working to support olive farmers access the olive groves. And in 2004, we realized once the wall was in place, mm-hmm. they won't be able to sell it even if they can access it.
Okay.
So that was the thinking behind it. It became the world's first fair trade olive oil mark with a fair trade mark, which is incredible.
That's such an achievement. That's brilliant.
Yeah, and it's also, it caught a lot of imagination. And crikey, we had literally thousands of people getting behind Zaytoun, even sending us demands for the product before it even reached the UK. So there's a real market to taste the heritage of Palestine. And it's the home of the olive tree, right? I mean,
okay.
any religious book, I guess. I'm not particularly religious, but any holy book says, talks about olive trees, right?
Yes,
and,
sure.
And they're certainly talking about, well, they're not talking about Italian ones. They're talking about Palestine, right?
And how do you actually get the product out? Because it's, at times that must have been pretty difficult as well. I mean, export must be quite a nightmare as well.
It is, yeah. I sometimes jokingly sort of say that that's one of the exciting things about Zaytoun as well, is how we're able to take a product out of so many checkpoints through that wall. And it's down to the credit of lots of people on the ground working, that be they Israelis or Palestinians, mm-hmm. being able to work together to be able to support the solidarity behind the venture,
which is also really key. Because I love those stories where you get, you know, two communities that are supposedly warring with each other, or, you know, in complete opposition, and yet you get always individuals who just, that boundary doesn't mean anything. They want to work together. They want to cooperate. Yeah. They want there to be no division. So that's in itself a really exciting, commendable thing, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, in terms of diversity and getting people to connect, it really is as well. Mm-hmm. And there are plenty of Israelis that are deeply hurt by some of the savages in which their government is mm-hmm. is taking on and what it's doing to people in Palestine. And what we're really sort of seeing is that there is this camaraderie that does exist, you know, it does, and it's certainly not as black and white to try and demonize Israeli folk just mm-hmm. because they're on the power end of the side. It's trying to work out is how does this connection to a product, rather than saying this is outrageous, but how do people in the UK or the rest of Europe connect to a message in a bottle,
mm-hmm.
or even when they buy a bottle, you know, as Zaytoun, I don't know if you're allowed to say this, but it's in every Oxfam shop in the country, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's in Brighton, it's big. Brighton was our biggest home, I guess, even before I moved to Brighton.
Okay.
Yeah, Infinity, Taj, Hisbee, they're all there.
Yes.
They're all excited about Tradecraft. But they, and, you know, we started with a small group of farming families. In fact, it was one village, you know, and now it's 25 villages. It was 10 farming families at that time.
Because I guess word gets around, doesn't it? And that's how it... this kind of business works.
Yeah, I mean, Zaytoun is created by so many farmers in cooperatives, and mm-hmm. we ourselves are a community interest company. And people buy it, they get excited, and I think now more than ever people want to connect to the things they buy.
Yes.
And Brighton's really good at doing that.
Brighton's always seems to be an early adopter where that kind of thing's
yeah I think so. Well, Bristol should fairly give Brighton a run for its money on that. But I'm a Brighton.
Being in mind that this is the Brighton business show, we're going to give Brighton the
well, let's
extra
not be
points
complacent. But Brighton's got a lot to be.
Brighton could do better, is what you're saying.
I think Brighton should always
not rest on its laurels.
Not rest on its laurels. Yeah, but Brighton's great. I mean, crikey, it's why Zaytoun was able to flourish well here, even more so than even though we were Londoners. You know?
Sure, and that's really interesting. And you then. That's not, of course, the only thing you're involved in. I've got assistive technology written down here. So assistive technology, what does that mean?
It's a good question. I often ask it every day. I do a lot of talks and support around it, and I think actually it means nothing.
So it's kind of help with technology? Is that?
Well, it comes from an idea that there are people impacted by disabilities mm-hmm. or disabled people or people with disabilities. And it's the technology designed to make that life easier. And that's essentially what DNA is. I set up a social enterprise with friends, and we created a cooperative working with the National Union of Students campaigns at the mm-hmm. time to get more disabled learners teaching technology that they themselves use, have lived experiences, and sometimes those technologies haven't been good enough, and what they've done to work around it.
Okay.
And how do they build authentic mechanisms that says, actually, this has really changed me. This improved my confidence levels. This has gave me a sense of belonging to be mm-hmm. at higher education or in the workplace. And then to provide that technology and training to other learners who sometimes often feel excluded or forgotten. And it's how do we change that by getting more, I guess, lived experiences being what makes that technology so meaningful rather than it just being about tech.
I understand.
And those who are good at it and those who are not.
Okay.
This is the world of Radio Reverb.
So you're listening to the Brighton Business Show with Vivian Smith and my guest Atif Chowdhury. And we've been talking about cooperatives and now also about learning, but learning prompted by users of technology who perhaps are having to find ways around what might to an able-bodied person be very easy. They're having to find ways around and sort of shortcuts, and they are of course the best people to perhaps drive innovation in technology, I'm guessing, but also they're the best people to educate us as to what they need and what works best for them. So how did you get involved in that? I mean, it seems, I'm sure, to you very obvious that would be a natural progression, but from olive oil to technology, not necessarily an obvious step. So tell me about what brings you to doing that.
Yeah, no, good. It's great. You know what? I really wish there was a lateral...
I like the threads. I like to know how people get to places.
I'm a dyslexic learner. So
okay.
I struggled mm-hmm. a lot. My sense of belonging at school... I can't say it was easy, mm-hmm. But I certainly had one or two good teachers I'll never forget, you know.
Yes.
But I think I found my voice as a person and I guess as a business mind in Palestine, you know, weirdly, in the West Bank and mm-hmm. in parts of the Gaza Strip. I realised I have a contribution to make, that what I think and can create and be part of, if it's heard well mm-hmm. and listened to, can be part of something that's really meaningful.
Sure.
And when I came back to the UK, I was looking at the technologies that I needed to support me through university. I couldn't access them easily.
Okay.
So I started taking part in communities that were offering things for free. Then I got asked to teach it more, mm-hmm. and that grew from there. And what it allowed me to do was to work as a technology trainer, but stop doing it when I wanted to so I could go off to Palestine again. So simultaneously. It's only when I really spent time, once we'd got Zaytoun off the ground, and how successful that was with so many families, that I realised although they seem so different, they're about making connections. They're
yes.
about enabling voices that need to be heard, really.
Sure.
Be they marginalised voices in Palestine as farmers and families, or be they disabled individuals who have good aspirations in the UK. Mm-hmm. So from there, I realised actually the thing that got me through authentically was other people who were also neurodivergent or neurodiverse, impacted by dyslexia, who were telling me what they did. And from there, I realised, wow, if it without you, I probably wouldn't have stayed. It wasn't necessarily teachers or universities or the well-meaning lecturers.
It was someone who actually is facing the same challenge. I mean, I'm particularly interested in this subject because my son is mildly dyslexic, and he's just about to start uni in September. And I know that there are some things available. Well, we've been told there'll be some things available, some help available for him. For instance, I think he can get hold of the notes in advance and that kind of thing. He's lucky he's not severely dyslexic. He covers it up well, I'd say.
Masking it.
But I think I was always struck by the difference between how eloquent he is verbally. And when you read some of his written work, it doesn't sound like the same person.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the story of my life, you know, literally. So, I mean, that's exactly what I've grown up with. And I normalised that. And your son may be doing what I used to do, which was, oh, well, then I'm not very bright. And then people say, oh, you are. You are. Oh, certainly. Look what you're capable of. Look how you sound. And say, well, if you only knew how I wrote, then... Because we judge children by and young adults as...
What they produce, I suppose.
Yeah, what their working memory is and what their literacy skills are. And in terms of, you know, their sense of voice or ambition or how they dream and what they're capable, these aren't really on the table. They kind of, and we pretend they are, but they're not really. The biggest thing that will enable any student in this country to make it to higher education isn't whether they're not dyslexic or are dyslexic or disabled or not. It's their sense of belonging. What is their self-esteem telling them? And how do they get to say, yeah, right. However diverse my needs are, however different
I still belong in that room,
I belong here. I'm going to show you what this difference creates.
Yes,
that's the same as any business as well. Businesses are here now not to accommodate differences but to be excited by them.
Yes,
to say actually
because they
better.
Bring so much more, don't they? I mean, creativity, new ideas, it's in many ways very inspiring actually. And I'm imagining that you see it all the time. There are, as I said, innovations earlier on that would only have come about or have only come about because someone was trying to get somewhere via a different route.
They were
trying to access something.
And what you're doing there is you're not touching on disability there any more than we're talking about the diversity of thought.
Sure.
Yeah, and that diversity of thought is all around us. At times it can feel disabled. And at times it can build innovations to get around it. And at times it can just knock so hard that the door has to smash open. Mm-hmm. But they're not easy things. But if you think, Thomas Edison was dyslexic. And he was in a world full of candles. Mm-hmm. So most people said, you don't need that. He was convinced that we did. Turns out we did.
Yes.
Henry Ford, famous dyslexic guy, said, if I gave the customer what he wanted, it would have been a faster horse. Right? And the point I'm making is, no one can say he was wrong, right? He was absolutely right, but sometimes the world can't see.
So history will, when we look back on things, we'll be able to see what was actually important.
Yeah, I mean, look what Apple did, and I'm a dyslexic person.
I was going to say, wasn't he? And Steve Jobs, but it wasn't, I remember hearing that Bill Gates was either autistic or dyslexic.
ADHD.
I
guess really what I'm saying is we're all neurodiverse.
Sure.
We all love and think differently. But we're not all marginalized by it.
No.
So when we are, let's talk about what we are, what that means. Mm-hmm. When we're facing physical differences, let's talk about what that means in terms of impact. Mm-hmm. But when we're talking about businesses are far better off when they embrace that difference. Rather than, I guess, just reasonable adjustment narratives, which don't make you feel that included.
Mm-hmm.
It's looking at how does this person come into work with these impacts show me what good looks like. If I'm Transport for London and I've got lots of wheelchair users that navigate transport systems, then they can tell me how good my system is. They can show me and they can help write policy.
Mm-hmm.
But if I don't do that, then how will I ever know?
Sure.
And that applies that to small businesses too. It's about embracing that difference because you need it rather than it being just the right thing to do.
Okay, that makes sense.
Radio Reverb.
7.2. Radio Reverb.
You're listening to the Brighton Business Show with Vivian Smith, broadcasting on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. You can also listen via the website radioreverb.com or via the podcast on Audio Boom.
probed into its mysteries, every clue told me a different story.
Radio Reverb.
So, Atif, we're talking about your latest, if you like, cooperative, and that's DNA. And I know that you invest 50% of the profits back into the business. Can you tell me if that's a sort of policy that you've always had, or is it something that's kind of come about?
Yeah, I didn't really think about it any other way.
Okay, so it was always going to be the case.
Yeah, well, we also work, so we put a lot of the profits working with marginalised communities who cannot access the technologies at all. Mm-hmm. So we also put it to working with homeless agencies.
Okay.
And setting up support for people who, because ironically, you know, it doesn't really matter if you call it assistive technology or not, is these are technologies that can help many lives, but you can't access them unless you are getting them through access to work programs in the workplace. It means you've got a job and mm-hmm. it's meaningful mm-hmm. and long term, or you've got it through higher education, through the disabled students allowance. Whereas the most marginalized people that are disabled and needing these technologies, or neurodivergent and needing these technologies, they may be homeless. They may never have a, you know, you and I are talking about dyslexia, but there may be hundreds of people on the streets that have no idea they are. They just know that.
Exactly, yes.
So what we're trying to do is make sure as a social enterprise that the profits we make goes towards growing the organization so we can recruit more trainers. Yes, we started just with me and now there's over 87 of us. Mm-hmm. Do you know? So that's a good size number.
That's pretty impressive, yeah.
And to have that many people with lived experiences working is a wonderful legacy on its own.
Sure.
But making sure that we can provide the same technology, and we're pushing Brighton Local Council on this. Mm-hmm. We're working wonderfully with some brilliant, and Brighton Hove Housing Trust, some brilliant, and YMCA organisations in Brighton who are trying to look at this and how these technologies can be made accessible to their service users.
So what I like is that you've recognised that you can't, again, work in isolation. You're going to need to have partners within the community that reaches out to those marginalised groups. And you may be identifying also gaps, you know, where, as you say, you know, with a lot of homeless people, they don't know, or one's actually suggested to them that there might be help there for them.
Oh, God, yeah, you did right. I'm so glad you're picking up on this. It means a lot to me. To a large extent, for a lot of people who get a diagnosis, they're coming from a space where there's been early support. Maybe their parents have been able to navigate those kind of conversations. Their parents are part of social capital, maybe a class differentiation mm-hmm, that says mm-hmm. we can be anticipatory on this. But for a lot of other folk, that's just not the case. Their parents are not from that place, or their culture might not talk about learning differences in that way. There may be a lot of shame. And all those things can have a secondary impact, which could be not coming forward to navigate even your own shelter, not coming forward to support your own relationships. Those things are impacted by, say, could be autism, ADHD, mm-hmm. dyslexia, dyspraxia, and that would be common. But getting a diagnosis in order to evidence it or prove it is a silly way of going about it, I think.
Mm.
I think if there's an impact, let's address that impact rather than just
without making you jump through the hoops too.
Absolutely. Because we have a tendency as a country, and the whole country does this, we really focus on substance abuse, alcohol and drug abuse, but we don't do enough work on why. You know, and what led to that?
The underlying sort of symptoms, and
how do we get to the root of that? And if we can provide support and technologies for people in higher education, that's so meaningful. And yes, we do. Mm-hmm. And if we can provide it in the workplace, and yes, we do, then why can we not provide it for the very communities that can't access either?
Because I would imagine it's quite common for people to assume that it's because I'm not clever enough, or because I don't know, I had a bad start, or you know, my dad meet me up or whatever. There may be multiple reasons why someone is struggling to live a productive life or to live a fulfilling life. And I guess that the beauty of an organisation like yours is that you have enough experience, enough literally on the ground knowledge to be able to spot those stories, maybe make some deductions that other people would miss, that you'd be able to sort of say, well, have you ever thought of this, or did it ever occur to you that let's try this? I guess what I find really exciting about your story. And I know that you are a multi award winning person, and we were discussing earlier whether awards actually mean anything or not, and possibly you would argue that they don't. But your most recent award, please tell us about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's quite an exciting week, I suppose. So I've been nominated by a really wonderful organisation called Unlimited, who do some amazing work to help incubate social enterprises. So they nominated me for an award for Entrepreneur of Excellence at the National Diversity Awards. Which is big.
That's a pretty big deal, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, apparently, I mean,
I know you're being very modest, but I'm going to say it. I'm pretty sure that's quite a big deal.
Quite a few thousand people were nominated.
And
I guess.
Who else was nominated?
Lenny Henry, I suppose, and Stephen Fry. And I'm in.
So you're in fairly good company there.
Yeah, yeah, and that's great. And I've been lovely. I've been honoured to meet them. Really, both of them, really. Yeah, and DNA won the Noon Award, which is a big award for diversity in businesses.
Okay.
And we won that at the Global Equality and Diversity Award ceremony. So that was brilliant, you know. And
it's good that you're on Radio Reverb, because actually we also are a diversity award winner. So
yes,
that's quite good. We've got things in common there. And tell me, what difference is that going to make to you? I mean, possibly it will enable more funding, will it? Will it enable more of a spotlight on the good work that you do? How does that help?
I suppose ultimately, I mean, like all these things in terms of media, they're in our hands as to how much we utilise that. I suppose we absolutely have to, because it's really important in terms of the messaging. But it's also, I mean, looking beyond the awards and all the fanfare, is sometimes the biggest things that we all make, and I think that's for everybody out there, it's the intimacy of what you do, you know, knowing that there's somebody who, oh, cracky, we can win awards and we can get some really wonderful statements written by people about how good we are. And we love that, of course we do. But sometimes it's going to be a smile from someone who's not able to write it down and not even maybe verbally to express it.
Yes. But sure you get rewarded like that every day, don't you?
Yeah. And I suspect, you know, and we're lucky, because we are people who didn't think we belong in school, and yet we realise our lived experiences are exactly the very thing that every school and business
we all need.
Yeah, yeah.
It turns out that actually you were the people who belong the most. Thank you so much for coming on to talk to us, and I wish you all the very best. You obviously don't need my luck, but I wish you all the very best, particularly with this award coming up. And you know, what an inspiring story, and what a fantastic thing that you do. And thanks from everybody listening, including myself, for what you do.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Vivian Smith on the Brighton Business Show. I want to say a big thank you to my guests today, who were Carrie Smith from the Brighton Chamber and Atif Chowdhury from DNA. You're listening to Vivian Smith on the Brighton Business Show. This is Radio Reverb 97.2 FM on DAB and online at radioreverb.com. If you run or work in a business that listeners would be interested to hear about, then please do get in touch with me via radioreverb.com. We'd like to hear your story. That's all for this month. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll talk to you again soon. Bye bye.